I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
What we need to do is we need to do everything in our power to prevent it from entering our country and be ready for it if it does.
Messages and measures that may feel all too familiar to many. International concern over a new variant of COVID-19 and its potential impact. The restrictions already rolling out here in Canada.
Limiting travel from several countries in southern Africa, including a ban on some foreign nationals. And the requirements for Canadians returning home from those areas. Good evening. The spread of the strain is creating a renewed sense of caution around the world.
But even the experts admit so much remains unknown at this point. It's being named Omicron, with the World Health Organization classifying it as a highly transmissible virus of concern. That's the same category that includes the Delta variant. At this stage, there are no confirmed cases in Canada, but that isn't stopping the government from imposing stricter travel rules. Scientists are calling for a measured response as they continue their research.
But there are fears Omicron may spread more easily. We begin our coverage with CTV's Genevieve Beauchemin.
Just 2 days after South Africa flagged a new COVID strain, the WHO convened an emergency meeting and classified Omicron as a variant of concern. Fears of its transmission have already triggered several countries' emergency brake on travel in and out of southern Africa, sending travelers in the region scrambling.
I don't know when I'll be able to return. I had to leave my job behind and getting on a plane today.
Ottawa is among governments quickly slamming the door to travelers from seven countries.
We are banning the entry of foreign nationals into Canada that have traveled through southern Africa in the last 14 days.
Canadians traveling in the region now, even those fully vaccinated, will have to be tested, quarantined. And that also applies to anyone now in Canada who has traveled through in the last 14 days. No trace of Omicron has yet been detected here yet, but the Public Health Agency says that would not come as a surprise.
The border is never 100%, but each layer provides an additional layer of protection.
Scientists are racing to find out more, just how transmissible this variant may be, whether it causes more severe illness, whether it reduces the protective power of vaccines. But experts warn its high number of mutations is evidence of a big jump in evolution. And all this serves as a reminder to infectious disease specialists that the more COVID circulates, the more variants will emerge.
Specialists also say as worrisome as the new variant may seem, it's important to take a measured approach until much more is known. Genevieve Beauchemin, CTV News, Montreal.
With the eyes of the world now focused on this new strain, how prepared is Ontario to deal with another variant?
That question being asked as the province sees a significant increase in the number of COVID-19 cases. Public Health Ontario is reporting 927 new cases in its most recent update. That is the highest single-day increase since early September. 549 of today's cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Nearly 34,000 tests were processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 3%.
CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
On tonight, Premier Doug Ford is expressing his extreme concern with this new variant, saying Ontario's best defense right now is to stop it right at the border. The Omicron variant is raising alarms in Ontario as infectious disease experts worry about its potential.
These are mutations that would make the virus either A, more transmissible, or B, evade immunity, for example, from infection or vaccination.
A vaccine-resistant variant is among the province's top concerns because of its ability to disrupt the province's reopening plan. And after dealing with the destructive Delta variant, the province's health advisors aren't taking any chances.
The task at hand now is to delay entrance of this variant into the country and into the province of Ontario as long as possible, so that we make it hopefully fingers crossed, to next spring, when things, of course, will be less challenging because we all move outside again.
Local level.
Today, the premier met with the chief medical officer of health to prepare for the worst and to call on the federal government to ban all flights and passengers from countries of concern, to test and quarantine all passengers who've already arrived from those regions, and to reintroduce point of arrival testing for all passengers coming to Canada, regardless of where they're coming from. But some believe it might already be too late.
I think we have to realize that at this point in the pandemic, what is it, 1.5, almost 2 years in, we know a lot more about the virus than we did back at the beginning. And really, you know, we know these travel bans or travel restrictions don't really work. In fact, I'm pretty sure that the variant is probably already here. It just has not been detected yet.
The Science Advisory Table says the province simply doesn't know, but says it has to seek out the variant.
Let's hope it hasn't gained a foothold yet. That would be great news. But we need to do, of course, whatever we can with a genetic sequencing to figure out whether it already is in Canada or not.
The science advisors believe the province needs to ramp up third doses and is calling on the public to limit contacts as much as possible over the Christmas holidays. The Ontario NDP says the government now needs to shift its focus to what happens inside Ontario's borders, calling for a stepped-up tracking, tracing, testing campaign, as well as isolation to add to all of that. The premier says they are stepping up their surveillance efforts to catch this variant as soon as it spreads, and they're also planning for the worst-case scenarios and what to do then. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Colin. 666 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 600,000 over the course of the pandemic. Six additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,991 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 129 new cases in the city of Toronto and 54 in Peel Region. York has 52 new cases, with 41 in Durham and 33 in Halton. There are 29 new cases in Hamilton, with 18 in Niagara Region.
At airports across the country, staff and travelers are once again adjusting to rule changes. As things stand, there are currently no direct flights from the affected region to Canada. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live at Pearson tonight with more. Beth.
Michelle, speaking to people getting off the planes, you get the sense there was a bit of a scramble traveling today, as well as a sense of relief of being home. A good trip to Southern Africa has come to an end, but now there are new concerns.
Members of our group, because they will be arriving from South Africa on Sunday.
The sisters were on a safari in Tanzania for 13 days, a country not impacted, and before that, South Africa. Just enough time not to be included in the new restrictions.
Yeah.
You just got in under the wire.
Yes, luckily.
And we're quite happy about it.
Yes.
Canada is joining other countries banning entry of foreign nationals who have been to South Africa, Mozambique, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Lesotho, and Eswatini as fears about the new Omicron variant grow. Anyone who has traveled to the countries in the last 14 days arriving back in Canada must quarantine and go for a COVID-19 test. There are flights coming into Pearson from Europe with passengers from all over the world. It appears airlines may be on high alert looking for people flying from the affected region. This woman just landed from Amsterdam.
I heard them looking for two folks from South Africa, but I don't know if they made the flight or not. They were announcing their names over the speaker, but I never figured out if they got on the flight or not.
The green stickers mean these sisters are not required to do extra testing. Because there are no direct flights from the region to Canada, Canadians and permanent residents will have to receive a negative COVID-19 test in a third country before coming home. Reporting live at Pearson, I'm Beth McDonnell. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. And the developments in this story are fast moving. We'll keep you updated over the course of this newscast. Our online team is also keeping track of the newest information. It's at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Straight ahead, the new rules for many student athletes in Toronto. If you want to play, you'll need to be vaccinated. Why the move is being called necessary and what other areas could soon follow.
If you drive, get ready for a very big break on gas this weekend. The price at the pump is expected to plummet by 11 cents a liter on Sunday. Dan McTagg of Canadians for Affordable Energy calls the drop unprecedented. It means prices in Toronto will go down from $1.45.9 to $1.34.9 a liter.
Meanwhile, another thing could be falling this weekend, and that is snow. You may have seen some flurries across sections of the GTA already. Let's bring in Michelle Jobin with a look at the Friday night conditions. Jobin.
Well, what we're looking at in the next little while, Michelle, is definitely flurries throughout the GTA, and also we're seeing snow squalls north and west of the city. So that's creating some difficult driving conditions on the road. Roads are slick wherever you are. It's just we have poor visibility setting up in areas that are under the warnings. So this is what we're looking at in terms of snow squalls and winter weather travel advisories. There's a broader winter weather travel advisory in effect here in the yellow, and areas in orange are in the snow squall warning. So off of Georgian Bay and Lake Huron, up to 25 centimeters of accumulation possible. These gusty northwest winds are what are driving the squalls over the lakes and off of the lakes because the waters are relatively warm compared to the air. -2 is where we're sitting right now in Brampton, -3 in Cobourg, -6 in Bancroft. And of course, wind chills will continue to be a factor tonight, feeling like minus one, feeling like -9 at the islands right now, -2 feeling like -9 at Pearson, heading for a low of -4. Back to you, Zoraida.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks. Also tonight is finding a Christmas tree part of your weekend to-do list. Might be easier said than done. The reasons that could make it a holiday headache this year.
The garage of a Scarborough home sealed off by police tape.
Just what exactly happened inside, now the focus of a homicide investigation. CTV's Austin Delaney is live on Blacktop Drive near Shepherd and Meadowvale tonight. Austin.
And just a short while ago, Toronto police identified the victim. He's 25-year-old Malcolm Ellis of Toronto. He died in the garage behind me about 2 in the morning. Toronto police going door to door on this Scarborough street as they try to find out if any neighbors heard or saw a fatal shooting.
I didn't hear a thing.
It was 2 in the morning when gunshots rang out. Primrose Lily's home just a few houses down from the scene.
I think it's horrible. I think it's too close to home, and I'm sorry, you know, it's someone's child, and they all start off sweet, right?
A young man and his grandfather live in the home. The victim, a friend of the grandson, 25-year-old Malcolm Ellis of Toronto, shot on the driveway just inside the garage.
All summer, when the weather's nice here, its garage is open. There's lots of, but a lot of young kids hang around in the garage.
Ellis's murder now in the hands of the homicide squad.
So everyone we've spoken to so far is cooperating or hoping to find more witnesses as we progress.
It's not good. I don't know how people go around with guns.
Neighbors say not much ever happens on this street, but worry about the violence in the city.
It's something that's happening too often all over now.
I am glad to know that he's not the guy who was shot. He's not from this
not
area.
From the house, yeah.
Not from this area, so that's some good news for us. You know, because
but it's sad for some young person to have lost his life over.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is some silly thing that they just lose their mind about.
Police hope neighborhood security cameras will show at least the getaway car. And we're in the Meadowvale 401 area. Police are asking anyone who was around 4 or 2 in the morning if they saw a speeding car or anything like that to give them a call. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. No vaccination, no sports. That's the message for many students, athletes in Toronto.
The rule now being enforced by the TDSB for those 12 and older. CTV's Mike Walker is live with more on this tonight. Mike.
Well, Michelle Zoraida, the TDSB says this was a necessary decision to help prevent any potential spread of the virus amid rising case counts and many of these high contact winter sports taking place indoors. On the cusp of winter sports kicking off,
take your mark.
The Toronto District School Board is requiring students 12 and older to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 if they want a shot at playing for their school team.
I think that's fair. You know, we have to keep everyone safe.
It's to keep other kids protected from other students, so I think it's actually a great idea.
The new policy applying to competitive sports that involve competition against other schools and travel to play.
We're coming inside now more and more. Case counts are not going in the right direction.
You have a lot of close contact in many of these sports.
The board says its decision is consistent with recommendations from Toronto Public Health, which has already issued an order requiring anyone 12 and older participating in indoor organized sports to provide proof of vaccination.
In the very rare cases where it may not be possible to be vaccinated for some students, we will work with Toronto Public Health to ensure that they can participate.
The province is providing rapid testing kits to school boards for unvaccinated students and coaches participating in indoor high-contact sports. But a spokesperson for the Minister of Education notes, under the Health Protection and Promotion Act, a local public health unit working closely with the school board could impose enhanced restrictions on school sport activities.
The children are the had the highest incidence of COVID.
This pediatric health expert believes the mandate is necessary amid rising case counts and masks not required for sports like basketball and hockey.
If there's an outbreak or exposure in one school, then it could be transmitted to another school.
Students will be required to upload proof of vaccination to the board's ServiceNow app before they can participate.
I think vaccines are very important. You can't always wear a mask. It's very hard to breathe with a mask.
I feel like one vaccination should be allowed instead of two. As long as you have like a mask and you like take a test.
The TDSB isn't alone. The public school board in York Region has the same policy. And the Toronto Catholic District School Board tells CTV News it's strongly considering a similar mandate. The school board says another reason for this policy is that many of the venues where these events are being held already require proof of vaccination. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Mike. Meanwhile, the province is sharing figures from its first day of widespread COVID vaccinations for kids under the age of 12. Children 5 to 11 were a common sight at clinics yesterday. Health officials say nearly 8,000 doses were administered to that age group yesterday. Some health units weren't included in the count as they're still waiting for their new supply of vaccines.
Across the province, nearly 89.2% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and 86.2% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 11.2 million people in Ontario.
In Ottawa today, the governing Liberals introduced new COVID-19 legislation they pledged to implement if re-elected. In the face of anti-vaccination protests, Bill C-3 would amend Canada's criminal code to add new criminal penalties for harassing healthcare workers. It would also become a specific offense to impede access to medical facilities or intimidate people accessing health services. The head of the Canadian Medical Association says that type of harassment has skyrocketed during the pandemic, and the proposed law will help address the issue.
Is it really makes it clear to people that this behavior is unacceptable. I really believe what we've been seeing is not who we are as Canadians. We can disagree with one another respectfully, but we should not have to fear or be intimidated to do the work that we attempt to do every day to care for others.
Justice Minister David Lametti said nobody should be intimidated from seeking or providing health care services. Convictions would carry a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. Ottawa is also implementing a minimum of 10 days paid sick leave for workers in the federally regulated private sector.
The House of Commons has voted to revive its hybrid sitting format as the pandemic continues. That means members of Parliament can choose to work from home until June. The motion was passed 180 to 140. The NDP sided with the Liberals, but the Bloc Québécois and Conservatives voted against it. MPs will be allowed to vote remotely and participate in debates and committee meetings. But there are no capacity restrictions in the House, so all MPs could show up in person if they choose.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has approved a request for military help as Newfoundland deals with the aftermath of a powerful storm. The island's southwest has been cut off from the rest of the province after several roads were washed out. The Canadian Armed Forces will be deployed to help with logistics and transport. Emergency Preparedness Minister Bill Blair says the military will also provide air support for evacuations and to keep supply chains running.
On the opposite side of the country, British Columbians are bracing for another series of potentially serious storms and the threat of even more rainfall and flooding. The earth in many regions is already waterlogged ahead of two more systems expected this weekend and next week. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in BC tonight. He received a briefing from local officials on the emergency response and will meet with Premier John Horgan later this evening.
Back here in the GTA, with snow in the weekend forecast, it would make for one of those picture-perfect holiday moments, heading out to pick a Christmas tree to bring home.
But this year, it could be a tougher task. CTV's Scott Lightfoot explains.
The snow is falling and the Christmas trees are ready at Horton Tree Farms, which opens for the season tomorrow.
We expect a huge amount of people coming early, more so than ever before.
They've been selling cut-your-own Christmas trees here since 1961.
In one time in York Region, not far from here, you could find 20, 30 Christmas tree farms. Today, there's only about three or four left.
Fewer farms, and this year, fewer trees, in part because of decisions made more than a decade ago.
Some say the recession of 2009, people didn't plant because of hardship, and then this year there was quite a bit of frost in eastern Canada, Quebec, and the Maritimes, and that affected a lot of trees, made them unsaleable.
A few kilometers away, the Gannon family has found their perfect tree at McPherson Tree Farm. They opened earlier than usual this year because last year demand was...
chaos. We closed in a week and a half, and typically we're open for about 4 to 5 weeks, depending on the year.
They, too, are dealing with the supply shortage of both the cut-your-own and pre-cut trees.
This is a Fraser fir. We ordered about 150. I got 50 pre-cuts. So they're in huge demand.
It's an issue facing tree shoppers across North America.
It's not just Ontario. It's Quebec, New Brunswick, Michigan, down through the states. There's a huge demand. And the supply is not there.
Tree farms are expecting a crush of shoppers in the coming days, eager to find the perfect tree. And they say with the proper care, you should be able to keep it alive until the holidays are over.
It might be dangerous to cut a spruce this early. You're better off taking a white pine or a fir, and you should be okay as long as you keep it fully watered and away from heat sources and so on.
Scott Lightfoot, CTV News.
Still ahead, you've been hearing about it in your inbox and on flyers for weeks. Black Friday is here. A look at the bargain hunting on this side of the border.
Well, we have flurries and snow squalls depending on where you are in the region. And it's going to be -4, feeling like -9 overnight. Tomorrow, chance of flurries, some sunshine. I have 2 degrees, feeling like -2, but we do have more snowfall on the way. That's going to arrive as we get into tomorrow night. And stay with us in through the day on Sunday. When all said and done, quite possible for Toronto to see up to 5 centimeters more further to the north. So it looks like we're going to get more significant accumulating snow here in the city. And then, of course, areas that are seeing snow squalls tonight could see, when all is said and done, 10 to 25 centimeters. So I'm going to take a look at where those areas are that are affected with the squalls. Be aware, driving conditions are difficult out there. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Have you crossed anything off your list today? Plenty of us have been busy searching for deals on this Black Friday.
The demand starting early.
TVs were some of the best bargains going out the door this morning. This woman heading out with a new camera.
I was looking for something that would just be good for, you know, family photography. I just had a kid earlier this year. And I've been waiting for Black Friday to see if I can score something. And this was, I think, the bundle is about $220 savings. So, yeah.
They got up early to cash in on deals. Jason was first in line.
I got here about 5:30. It's a little cold. But if they've got the items I'm looking for in stock, then it's worth the wait.
By mid-morning, the lineup was gone.
And we ran right across the parking lot when we saw no line.
We parked at the Scarborough Town Center, heading into the Scarborough Town Center, and rerouted here.
The store manager says Black Friday is one of the biggest days of the year.
A lot of our customers are looking to shop for TVs. We got some great savings on TVs, computers, and headphones. A lot of traction in cell phones as well, so it's been a huge hit since morning.
Some deals too hard to resist.
It was a good deal. A lot more than what I wanted to spend, but yeah, it worked out.
But not everyone walked away happy.
Came today also around 8 o'clock in the morning. I was in queue, and then later I found that it's not in stock.
So, how are you feeling about
it? I feel bad.
Across town at the Stockyards Walmart, they were lined up before the sun came up, and the early bird got the worm.
So, I just came for that. I was waiting, but it's almost sold out. So,
So that's why I think I'm lucky. So if I come around 1 hour later, I think I cannot find it because somebody was looking too.
I think it's nice to just get out a little bit.
A half price.
That's not bad.
Yeah, yesterday was like 57, today was 28 or something.
And according to payment provider Moneris, nearly 12.6 million transactions have been made across the country today. Roughly 4 million of those are here in Ontario.
December is just days away, and police services are launching their holiday ride programs to tackle the issue of impaired driving.
Impaired driving occurs at all times of hours. And for drivers who choose to break the law, there is no safe time to be impaired and operate a motor vehicle.
York Regional Police say ride stops this year will focus on previous known locations of impaired drivers and artery roads leading to residential areas. Police remind you to always call 911 if you see a suspected impaired driver.
Well, we knew the wintry weather was coming, and then these little snowflakes are nice, but the cold is cold.
It is really cold. And, I mean, at least in Toronto proper, we haven't had a big shovel out kind of situation yet. Is that happening this weekend, or are we going to be in the clear?
Well, we are looking at the potential for some accumulating snow as we get into Sunday. And I think this will be the most significant event for the city of Toronto so far. But of course, further to the north and west, we've had rounds and rounds of squalls already, and we're dealing with that again tonight. Weather is brought to you by Train, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So yeah, I mean, the temperatures took a sharp turn as we got into today. It's much colder than it has been for the last couple of days, trending a bit below seasonal. Right now in the city of Toronto, it's -2, feeling like -9. And wind chill has been a big factor today because we've had really intense gusts out of the northwest, over 50 kilometers an hour throughout much of the region. And that's really amplified how cold things feel as this colder Arctic air flooded its way in. As we get through the overnight, not a huge difference from now, but it's still feeling quite cold. -4 with a wind chill of -9. So dress for -9 if you are heading out the door. A little bit colder as we get over to the northeast, of course, getting into the minus double digits there. A little bit warmer tomorrow. And we will see some sunshine. We'll get a bit of a break. Squalls will start to die down. So that's good news because it's quite difficult out on the roads tonight. We'll see those power down because we are seeing a reduction in the wind speeds over the Great Lakes. And that's going to help those go away. But we've had some pretty intense squalls, especially off Lake Huron, also off of Georgian Bay. They are continuing this hour, and this is why we have this broader winter weather travel advisory. There's also one in effect for the Ottawa region. So areas in the travel advisory, 5 to 10 centimeters, 10 to 25 for areas in the orange here down towards the London area and along towards Barrie, Collingwood. So whiteout conditions really possible. Visibility can reduce very quickly. And really throughout the region, because we've had this sharp cool down, we've got those flurries out there. Roads are slick everywhere, so take it really slow on the roads. We get that break tomorrow. There's still a chance of flurries. Winds die down. But if you're in southwestern Ontario, by the early evening, you're seeing snow again from this next system that's moving in. And I'm going to show this for you on our forecast radar. So there's those squalls off the Upper Great Lakes starting to dissipate as we get into the morning. So that's the good news and a bit of a break. But there we go. There's the next system moving in by 6 o'clock. We're seeing much of southwestern Ontario dealing with this. It moves in by around 9:30 to the Toronto area. Get a little bit of a break in the morning and then more snow throughout the day. I think this is going to be about 3 to 5 centimeters for Toronto, more so if you live to the north, of course. So there's that chance of flurries and 2 degrees snow starting up Saturday night and -2. Sunday, periods of snow and 1 degree. Monday, just 0 as our high. Tuesday, a mix of rain and snow. And we're cold through most of the week. And then Friday, we get up to 8 degrees with sunshine. Back to you, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle. The Six Points interchange in Etobicoke was considered one of the city's most complicated intersections before it was demolished in 2019.
Today, Mayor John Tory was on hand to celebrate the completion of a major reconfiguration project.
This was once known as Spaghetti Junction because all kinds of roads wound around each other, just like you see in a pot of spaghetti. And now we've transformed the transportation infrastructure to better suit what is now to come, which is a vibrant community center for Etobicoke, a place where we can have a true heart of this wonderful part of Toronto where people can live and work and play.
While the roadways are complete, the city says there's a lot of work left to do as they aim to create a new community hub in Etobicoke Center. The area also now has three new street names. Two are in Ojibwe and one is named after Jerry Horvath, who was the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays for 36 years.
Elsewhere, the province is pushing ahead with work on a controversial highway project through York Region and Simcoe County. The Ministry of Transportation put out a request for bids to build a bridge crossing for the Bedford Bypass. That part of the project would happen along Simcoe County Road 4, while the planned 16-kilometer four-lane freeway would connect Highways 400 and 404. The Ford government says the project will reduce gridlock. Critics have questioned its environmental impact and proposed route.
Also tonight, between the high-end storefronts of Yorkville, an incredible story of starting over. A young tailor who lost everything in Syria finds a new beginning here in Canada.
And a reminder, our 26th annual Toy Mountain campaign is underway, benefiting the Salvation Army this holiday season. There are several ways to show your support as we build a mountain of toys. You can do it by phone by texting TOYS to 30333 to make a $25 donation.
You can also visit toymountain.ca to find a list of locations where you can drop off a new unwrapped toy to give a child this Christmas. The pandemic has been accompanied by a worsening opioid crisis across Canada.
This week, W5 is taking a look at calls for criminal charges for drug dealers who sell drugs that lead to deaths.
He did something illegal that he knew could cause irreparable harm, and he did it anyway. It seems predatory and
punishable.
Yeah. This drug dealer needs to know that his actions caused somebody to not be alive anymore.
Back in 2016, W5 found evidence of manslaughter or criminal negligence charges being laid in connection with just 9 overdoses across Canada. The number has risen since, and that story is the focus of a W5 report called Death Penalty. And W5's Avery Haynes joins us now with more on what she uncovered. Avery, give us a sense of how your team compiled your research, and what did you discover?
Hi, Michelle. Yeah, we realized when we first started investigating this, after I was contacted by Gail, the woman you heard just off the top there, whose beautiful, successful, smart 24-year-old daughter died less than a year ago from a fentanyl overdose. And she was asking me, why did they charge the alleged dealer with possession and trafficking, but not charge him with anything in relation to Reed's death? And so when we first started looking for statistics to see how often it was happening in Canada, we came up against a complete brick wall because there were none. And so with the help of your managing editor, Ian Caldwell, we did an open source investigation. We tracked all of the media reports between 2016, sort of the beginning of the crisis, to now. We scoured through court documents with keywords inputted. And in rare instances, we accessed police statistics to find that there's been a 700% increase in murder by overdose charges, so manslaughter or criminal negligence causing death, when somebody sells or shares drugs that end in death.
What's even more interesting is the bulk of the increase is due to a new approach by Canada's second largest police service here in Ontario, the OPP. What is their mandate, and why aren't other police agencies following suit here?
And you know, Michelle, it is controversial. The OPP made a decision, a directive right across the province. Every single overdose death that they respond to is now treated not just as a medical call, but also as a potential murder. And so they are responsible for the bulk of the increase in charges. And they feel as though this is one component in trying to stem this, as you mentioned off the top there, stem this epidemic of death that has just, left few neighborhoods unaffected. And other police agencies don't appear to be doing this. There are random kind of pockets across the country, but I think it comes down to manpower. In the States, this is a big deal. They actually have drug-induced homicide laws in some states that carry the death penalty. But there are some real questions about whether this approach is doing more harm than good, and we'll tell you why coming up tomorrow night.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I'm just wondering, though, given that there is this shift in approach locally, is there any evidence that it's having an impact on overdose deaths?
It isn't. It just isn't having an impact. It's the research that we've been able to look at out of the States shows that, in fact, quite the opposite. Now, with such a fear of a murder charge, there are concerns that it is undermining Good Samaritan laws, which, if you call 911, there's a promise that you will not be charged with possession for having drugs. That promise does not extend to murder or manslaughter charges.
W5's Avery Haines, we have to leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
But I'll tell our viewers, you can watch her full report tomorrow right here on CTV. W5's Death Penalty airs right after our 6 o'clock newscast. Meanwhile, a university in the United States is developing a new way to reverse opiate overdoses.
And they've been testing it here in Canada. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
Opiate-related deaths in the U.S. and Canada have dramatically increased since the pandemic. One Canadian study showed overdoses in Ontario jumped from under 800 in the 6 months before the pandemic to over 1,200 from March to September of 2020.
Opioid overdoses remain a huge public health crisis and sort of massive public health concern.
But unlike other illnesses,
opioid overdose is unique in that there is a very effective antidote that is time sensitive, and if it can be administered quickly, people can be completely reversed.
That antidote is naloxone. And while naloxone kits are given out free here in Ontario and in most parts of the U.S., Dr. Jacob Sunshine and his colleagues have been creating a wearable device using technology from an already established injector system. That's coupled with a motion detector, which can sense if a person stops breathing, like during an overdose.
And then that's what is used to actuate the device to administer the naloxone.
The researchers tested the breathing monitor of the device with participants from Vancouver and tested the automatic injection with U.S. volunteers. The aim is to eventually provide this to opioid drug users.
People who are self-injecting opioids, particularly fentanyl, which is extremely dangerous.
Dr. Sunshine calls the device a complement to naloxone kits, not a replacement, and he says the goal is to make it as easily accessible as possible. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Pharmaceutical company Merck says its experimental COVID-19 pill has proven less effective than previously reported. The drug maker says a new clinical trial found the pill is 30% effective against hospitalizations and deaths, lower than the 50% figure it cited last month. U.S. health officials plan to meet next week to discuss whether the treatment's benefits outweigh the risk for various patient groups, including pregnant women. Pfizer is also working on an antiviral pill.
He was the driving force behind some of Broadway's most beloved and celebrated shows. Tonight, the theater world is mourning the loss of composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim.
Something dramatic, something for everyone coming tonight.
Some of his best-known works include A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Company, Sweeney Todd, and Into the Woods. He's also wrote the lyrics for West Side Story and Gypsy. Sondheim reportedly died early this morning at his home in Connecticut. He was 91.
Actor Ryan Reynolds is using his voice to raise awareness about the deadly flooding in Western Canada. He tweeted this morning, "My home of BC continues to face a crisis from the brutal BC floods. Homes, farms, schools, roads, and vulnerable communities. Rebuilding will take time. Blake and I made a donation to Red Cross Canada." He then directed his 18.3 million followers to the Red Cross website in case they want to chip in as well.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. It's Friday. We're kicking the weekend off right with some great TV. It all starts at 7 tonight on CTV.
What we need to do is we need to do everything in our power to prevent it from entering our country and be ready for it if it does.
Updating our top stories, the federal government is putting in new restrictions for travel from Southern Africa. This follows the discovery of a new COVID-19 variant of concern in the region. It's being called Omicron variant. Health experts have advised a cautious but measured approach while more is learned about the new strain.
I'm sure it is some silly thing that they just lose their mind about.
Toronto police have identified the victim in an early morning shooting as 25-year-old Malcolm Ellis. Shots rang out at around 2 a.m. at a home on Blacktop Drive near Shepherd and Meadowvale. Investigators are now working to identify suspects in the case.
And gas prices across Ontario are set to see their biggest drop in more than a decade this weekend. Canadians for Affordable Energy forecast the cost per liter will fall 11 cents to $1.349 a liter on Sunday. This comes after concerns over the new Omicron variant sent global oil prices plunging.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you ever have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 87 basis points to 78.21 U.S. American benchmark oil plunged more than $10 a barrel to close at 68.15. And the TSX Composite Index lost 480 points to close at 21,126.
Yes, concerns over the Omicron variant sent markets plummeting today, but the drop didn't affect all sectors of the market. Vaccine producers were among the handful of companies that reported gains today. Shares in Pfizer hit a record high today before closing up 6%. Competing vaccine producer Moderna jumped over 20%. Officials and health experts have said vaccines will have to be adapted as new variants of COVID-19 emerge.
The Bank of Canada is expected to raise interest rates in the coming months, but a new survey suggests many homeowners don't understand how they'll be affected. BNN Bloomberg and rates.ca commissioned a survey of over 1,500 Canadians. 29% of respondents who have or are planning to get a mortgage said that they were unsure or didn't know how a higher interest rate could impact their home loan. Analysts say that's cause for concern as homebuyers take on more debt to fund their purchases.
What will happen next? The international community is keeping a close eye on the spread of the Omicron variant.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're now joined by Christina Tenaglia and Rahim Ladani, who's co-anchoring this evening. Christina, you first. You'll be speaking with a panel of experts tonight.
Yeah, so Omicron, I mean, this sent the world community into quite a bit of anxiety today when the World Health Organization announced that Omicron is a new variant of concern consistent with, say, the Delta variant, and that they're both highly transmissible. But how much of a public health threat is Omicron, considering so much about it is still unknown? I mean, did the world community overreact, or are some of the measures we're seeing fair and effective? We'll ask our panel.
And Rahim, on this Black Friday, you'll also be talking about some common scams and how to avoid them.
Yeah, that's right, Michelle and Sarita. I mean, obviously the holiday spirit has people opening up their wallet, but the Grinch, a.k.a. scammers, they're getting more creative. In fact, Durham Region has actually seen a spike in fraud recently targeting the elderly. So we'll be chatting with police about different types of scams, including one called the romance scam. And then we'll also get some tips on how to protect yourself if you're online shopping and what to do if you do fall victim to one of these frauds.
Thanks, Rahim. Thanks, Christina. Mm-hmm. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
After the break, starting over, a family's business lost to war in Syria, rekindled here in Toronto.
Tonight, a deeper look at the newest COVID variant of concern.
But it's important to know that there's a lot that you can do to keep yourself and your loved ones safe.
The fallout from the Omicron strain, including new travel bans and tumbling markets. Later on CTV National News.
Toronto is one of the most vibrant, diverse, and interesting cities on the planet. We are a world leader in many areas, such as business, finance, technology, entertainment, and culture. Each week, Things to Know TO shines a spotlight on a wide variety of local businesses, services, events, and initiatives from across the GTA that are working to make our city even greater and one of the world's best places to live, work, and play. Join us Saturday mornings for Things to Know TO.
Finally tonight, a lesson in resilience. The owner of a local tailor shop continuing a long family legacy.
Forced to leave everything in Syria, finding a new home here in Canada. CTV's Sean Lethong has the story.
With every stitch, Mike Maradian is building his business, his life, for a second time.
When you lost everything else, you will become very strong.
The 27-year-old is originally from Syria and from a family of suit makers.
My dad, he teach me, And then I start to make a jacket when I was 15 years old from scratch.
For nearly 70 years, his family has owned a store in Aleppo. After fleeing the Armenian genocide, his great-grandfather came to Syria and began making suits in 1922, passing the business on to his grandfather and then to his father. Mike grew up in the store. They had manufacturing and exported suits all over the world, right up until war broke out in 2012.
The area we used to live, the ISIS take that area.
Their manufacturing facility was damaged by bombing, with ISIS forcing them out.
They took everything else. They stole everything else.
Once again, his family was forced to flee, coming to Canada in 2016. Mouradian was looking around Toronto for a place to start again, and he saw Yorkville.
It was one of my dreams. When I first time I came to Yorkville, I said to myself, one day I'm going to open a shop here.
Seeing high-end stores like Chanel and Versace motivated him. In 2018, Mouradian bought his shop right on Yorkville Avenue, calling it Last Minute Alteration, Tailoring, and Dry Cleaning. With pictures of his family looking over him, Mouradian will work 16 or 17 hours some days. Even using the scissors that his great-grandfather started with nearly 100 years ago.
This is like an amazing memory from him to me.
He's become a Canadian citizen and says that this place feels like home. Now he's focused on growing his business, creating his own custom suit store, and living by his own advice.
Put like a goal and then work on it, work very hard, and then you will have like everything else you're asking for.
Keeping a thread from his past and creating success for the future. Sean Lethong, CTV News.
Ah, nice to have a heartwarming story, because we're not getting much in the way of warmth this weekend, Michelle.
No, we really are trending a bit below seasonal, and it's just been that sharp turn from that milder weather we had for a couple of days. And because we've got that cold air that's flooded in from the northwest, that's driving these squalls that we are seeing and creating difficult driving conditions, really dangerous driving conditions in some places, because we can get poor visibility in seconds with these squalls and lots of accumulation as well. 10 to 25 centimeters in the areas in orange here when all is said and done. This is, you know, Goderich down towards London, the Barrie area extending over towards Collingwood, and a broader 5 to 10 north of the city of Toronto. Flurries here in the city of Toronto could see a bit of those tomorrow. A high of 2 degrees tomorrow after a low of minus 4, feeling like minus 9. Snow starts up Saturday night in through Sunday, 3 to 5 centimeters for the city of Toronto with a high of just 1 degree. And we stay pretty cool until we get to the end of next week when we'll see a high of 8 degrees. So there's your warm spot in the forecast, Michelle.
Thank you, and be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
We'll see you at 11:30.